that red light on.
Welcome to Drink Beer, Think Beer, the podcast that gets to the bottom of every pint. I'm John Hall, and this is the second of three episodes that was recorded during the Little Beer 4 Festival, hosted by Goodward Brewing in Duluth, Georgia. It's a seriously wonderful festival, and the fifth iteration is planned for April 19th, 2025. Get it on your calendar. This panel that you'll hear in just a moment was presented live during the festival, and it features a trio of cask beer experts who will be talking with my colleague Andy Crouch about the very best of the process. First, please visit allaboutbeer.com. There you can find original articles, reviews, news insights, and podcasts. Listen to shows like Brewer to Brewer and the All About Beer podcast simply by searching All About Beer wherever you listen to shows. You can also follow All About Beer on Instagram, Threads, X, and Facebook at All About Beer. And also keep up with all of the great smoked beer news and releases by going to This Week in Rauch Beer. You can search it on Facebook or follow at TW Rauch Beer on X, Threads, and Instagram. We also have glassware and apparel available on allaboutbeer.com/merch. This show and all of the work we do, it's supported by you. You can go visit patreon.com/allaboutbeer, and a few bucks really does go a long way to help keep the content fresh and to fund writers, photographers, creators, and editors. And if you'd like to learn more about advertising on this show or any of our shows or on the website, please email us at info@allaboutbeer.com. And with that, I'll let Andy Crouch take it away from Little Beers.
Okay, welcome everyone. I'm Andy Crouch, a longtime beer writer and publisher of All About Beer. And today I'm filling in for my partner, John Hall, as the host of the Drink Beer, Think Beer podcast. I know that people have been asking for this for a while. John is really tedious, and you know, we're going to try to have some fun today, and maybe this will stick. See, the crowd's already responding. That's right. We're here on the beautiful grounds of the Town Green here in downtown Decatur, which frankly...
Duluth.
No, we're not in Decatur. No, we're in Duluth. We're going to put that out in post. It's going to be fine. We're in Georgia. I think I got that right. Well, I don't know. I'm just stepping in as the new host, okay? I'm going to work through this.
I feel like I'm in the big
I believe that this event is called Little Beers. And today we are going to talk about one of the hottest trends in craft beer. It's called cask ale, folks. I'm sure you've seen it. It's everywhere. And we're going to introduce our esteemed panelists, starting with Neil Callahan, who is the beer director at the famed Brickstore Pub in Decatur, which is not where we are currently. It's one of America's premier beer venues. It's a place that I have tried to get to for the better part of 30 years and finally managed to do it yesterday. And it was every bit as magical as I was hoping it was going to be. The upstairs bar is a place I'm hoping to come back to and spend a lot of time. It's just, you know, Neil is an advanced Cicerone. He is a BJCP judge with more than 15 years of national and international experience. And the Brickstore runs, as we've talked about before, a fine real ale program. And I'm sure we're going to discuss that today. Next to him is somebody I've also known for a long time, Steve Hamburg, a good man from Chicago. He's the director and lead assessor of Caskmark Americas. He's the official representative of the UK-based Caskmark quality program in the Western Hemisphere, which he has led since 2016. Steve has more than 30 years experience with cask ale, souring, and dispense, beginning with volunteer work. It's a really long bio. I'm sure we'll put it in the show notes. Okay. We'll just say the man loves cask beer and knows a little bit about it. And then next to him is the reason we're all here today. It's Todd DiMatteo. He is the owner and brewer at Goodward Brewing, which is just up the street from where I sit. He is also the cruise director and founder of this glorious little event that we are at called Little Beers. We probably would have started a little sooner, but Todd was making his way through the crowd, giving hugs to every person he saw. I first heard of Todd a few years ago when my partner John sent me some of his beers in the mail, and they were really remarkable. They were clean, they were flavor forward, they had an expression about them, and it was about subtlety and beauty, and then I met him, and it really came through in those conversations as well. It also helps that he is a man my size, so it makes it easy to hug. It's something I enjoy.
I'm taller, guys, just so we know, I'm taller.
Very, very, yeah, he is much taller. He and his staff at Goodward, they work very hard to produce an authentic environment that sort of fosters a sense of community and get-togethers. I want to thank you, gentlemen, for being here today to talk about a topic that is one of those things that we joked about a little bit beforehand. It comes, with my second favorite thing in the world, which is lager beer. We say every year it's the year of lager beer. It's the year of cask beer. And you know what? These are two things that have just never quite had their day. But still, if you are into beer and you love beer and you want to show that you love beer, it's either lager or cask. And so, we're going to get into this topic today. And we'll start with Steve, who I think may be more of the expert, certainly, than myself. Can you give, for our audience who have somehow never had a cask beer, give us the basics. How is cask ale defined? What is real ale, and what do we need to know?
Sometimes I think we overthink it. It's really beer at its freshest. It's beer that's just finished its fermentation in a cask. So it's really fresh. It's generally a British style because it's Great Britain where cask addition ale exists, where that's its home. That's where it still thrives, although less than it used to. And I think when you drink it, what I like about it, I was just there for almost 2 weeks. And what's remarkable about it is it's low gravity and lower carbonation level, so you just don't feel full when you drink it. Yet it's still carbonated and alive and fresh and has wonderful flavors, and it's served at a temperature where you can appreciate the aromas and flavors. It's just magnificent. And I loved it the first time I ever had it, which is 1987, and I still love it today. But what I really hate is bad cask ale. Mm. So, and that's too often, that's been the battle. It's, when it's great, but it's easy to screw up.
1987 was 5 years before Todd was born. But now that you're here and you're enjoying cask beer, what drew you to cask beer?
I mean, so I was born in 79, you hilarious man. But, I spent a lot of time at Brickstore Pub, which is where our dear friend Neil Callahan is making things incredible. So honestly, I think for me, like with Goodward and our approach has always been taken from that, like a true public house, going in and not being blown away by, whatever's of the moment. We had a little bit of everything for, the guy who's, tired of drinking the same old stuff and really appreciates classic styles. And, I don't think there's much sexy about cask beer, and I honestly hope it doesn't become this thing where everybody rushes in and tries to figure it out on the way. Hopefully they look at people like Neil and Steve and maybe ask me a question or two and do it the right way, because I feel like a lot of times when we rush to what we think is going to be exciting, one, we don't put a lot of effort into it, and it's a misrepresentation of what cask ale should be. And I think that's one of the... Oh, there we go. Well, there we have it. Oh, nice. I think that's my take on cask beer. I love cask beer. Like Steve said, it must be fresh. And I like mine slightly cooler. We have ours at 50 degrees. Drink real beer. Drink what you like, but support cask beer.
Neil, as I said yesterday, I got a chance finally to come by your shop. It's just an amazing place. But one of the amazing things about it is you have this sort of elevated second story space that is not a lot bigger than some closets in maybe some houses around here. But it has more personality than most bars that I step into. And it also, beyond having this great, painted portrait of the bard Michael Jackson, who I got to explain to my son, my six-year-old son, who I had in the pub yesterday, who this man was, and others around are like nodding their approval, like, yeah, pass it on to that generation. You have, I believe, 4 beer engines there, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah, 4 beer engines. we're very, very fortunate to have great relationships, not only with local folks like Todd and Creature Comforts and Halfway Crooks and some of these other breweries that are doing really traditional English styles that are appropriate to be put onto a beer engine, but also with Sierra Nevada. So Sierra Nevada is sending us a whole lot of cask ale, which is pretty wonderful. So we're the only place that has it on 365 outside of their tap rooms. So that's Sierra Pale.
That's insane. It tasted, it was so, I had a long travel day yesterday. Things went awry at the airport, and by the time I arrived, the first thing that was sat in front of me by my dear buddy John, knowing my travel day, was that. And I don't know that I've seen anything more beautiful, and that's remarkable that you guys have that there.
It's pretty great. We're lucky to have a relationship with them, but they also trust us. To Steve's point, there is a whole lot of bad cask ale out there. Cask ale is not an easy thing to maintain. It's not an easy thing to procure. It's not an easy thing to educate staff on. I was just talking with the guys from Fox Farm and the guys from Wheatland Spring, and Fox Farm was saying they're putting a beer engine in, and they were very conscientious about putting it where guests can see the beer engine. So it's the kind of thing that does require some education on the part of the staff to the guest, because the guest might not be expecting something that is cellar temperature rather than very cold, that's something that is softer carbonation rather than a more lively carbonation. But once they see the actual beer engine on the bar top, it precipitates a conversation. Like, this is what this piece of equipment is what a beer engine is, this is what it does, this is what real ale is. And being able to explain that to guests and then see the light bulb go off behind their eyes and go, wow, oh, wow, okay, I didn't know it. I didn't know something like this existed. To be able to give them that experience in a really thoughtful and appropriate way is just, it's why we get out of bed. It's why we do what we do at the Brick Store.
It's like seeing a vice glass go over the bar and you see every head in the bar turn, which, frankly, I saw that happen as well at the Brick Store yesterday. But how, you know, a lot of folks are barely able to manage a single cask, a single engine, or just maybe they put it out once a week or every 2 weeks over the bar. It's not really a program. How are you able to manage four?
It's a lot of work, but it is, first of all, getting our staff excited about it, telling them why it's such a big deal that we have Good Word Digital Comforts on cask, or that we have Sierra Nevada Pale Ale on cask, and they're going to transmit that excitement to the guest, which is great. But it is a lot of work. But once you get somebody... Well, once they see the lure, then you got them hook, line, and sinker, and they really get excited for the exact reasons that Steve was describing. The fact that they can sit down and have three or four pints of Digital Comforts, not feel full, not have a big buzz on, and just be able to enjoy the experience, be able to enjoy the space at the Brick Store, and to be able to enjoy conversation. That's really what it's all about, is that these beers are here to facilitate an experience and a conversation. It's not about the beer being the most important part of the experience. It's about beer being a part of that experience.
Steve, you referenced earlier, obviously cask ale having its heritage in the United Kingdom, in Britain, in England, and cask ale also in recent years, you know, especially in the last five or so, is not as popular as it once was. And I had the numbers, I don't have them with me, but it's declined somewhat substantially, where I think it's something like, It's maybe 4% of production, but 15% or so of draft sales, which sounds, I mean, compared to the States, substantial, but down substantially over previous years. It's something that's harder sell now in the United Kingdom. But the U.S., it's one of those things we always say, it's like maybe going to be the year of the cask. Maybe this is going to be positive. I just came from Boston, where we host the New England Real Ale Exhibition, NARAX. Maybe the largest real ale event in this country, if not very close to it. And it's filled with, frankly, a fair number of older folks. And, you know, myself feeling at my age, well, I'm not going to tell you what my age is, none of your damn business. But I would just say that I've been at this a little while. And those folks tend to be a little older than me. Do you think that, you know, cask ale has the possibility, real ale has the possibility of being sold to a younger generation in the States? And if so, is that through innovation? Is it through turning hazy IPA into cask? Seltzer, what are we going to do to make cask more popular? Or is it something that just stays with that more traditional, maybe even older audience?
I mean, that's a great question. In the UK... a lot of people have said to me, oh, I went to England, I walked in the first pub and I had a cask ale and it was shit. And I said, you have to do your homework. You can't just expect that you it's like walking into a bar in the United States and, you know, figuring that every bar is going to have really good beer or a well-chosen beer list. It's like Cask Ale takes special care and proper presentation. But when it works, it's really funny. I'm always astounded that here I'm with two much younger people, a good bit younger, and it's working for them because they're presenting Cask Ale in their pubs that's worth drinking, that evokes conversation. When people see it, when they see you pull a beer, and then, you know, it's something different. So that whole, I mean, the first time I saw Cask Ale in a pub, I was like, I want that.
Yeah.
And I had already read about it, but it tasted great to me. And I was much younger then. I mean, that's 1987 was the first time I had it. And that's a long time ago. But I still love that experience of being in a pub. And that's something that we don't really, that's, I think, capturing the experience of having proper pubs. I think that appeals to every generation.
Yep.
And having a beer that's drinkable, that's simple, that's basic. I mean, it's weird that the classic style is called bitter. And yet, it's not really that bitter.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of a misnomer. It's bitter because it's not mild and it's not stout or whatever. But it's lovely and drinkable. And I have introduced so many people. It's something that appeals to so many people. And part of it is, I think, the person who wants something simple, cold, clean, whatever, they're not going to go for it. But younger people are embracing wonderful styles, better foods. They're much more demanding than when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I think there's always time for it. But what every generation will not accept is beer that sucks. And so Cask Ale has to be served right. It has to be, you can't just put it on the bar and say, hey, we have Cask Ale. You can't present it. The public's gonna know. It has to have reasons to drink. So what Caskmark was a UK, it's a UK program that was industry driven because people weren't buying Cask Ale in its homeland. It's just astounding that in Britain, you could go to so many pubs and get a shitty pint.
Yeah.
And you know, the public there, they speak like, it doesn't matter how, it's like, you gotta listen to your drinkers. It's like, it has to be worth drinking. And it doesn't matter whether you serve great Pilsner, great Belgian beers, you have to keep it and serve it properly. And Cask Ale is a very simple, it's not that hard to keep. I say this all the time. We make it more complicated than it is. The most important thing with Cask Ale is time. You have to mature Cask Ale. It's not that the beer completes its fermentation in the cask. Everyone says it finishes its fermentation in the cask. I've been to so many places, that beer isn't close to finishing its fermentation. Mm-hmm. It's still working in the cask because it takes more time. But it's not hard to do. You just have to have the dedication to do it right. Mm-hmm. And people will appreciate it when you have it. So I think that's across all generations.
Yep.
People love good flavors, and they appreciate it when it's great.
So there's one thing that has, one word that's come up, I think, from all of us, and that I think applies to all of the questions that you've asked so far, the word experience keeps coming up. And I think that's an important part of this equation when we're talking about why people should care about Cask and why people might in the future be even more engaged with Cask. It's an experience that you can't have anywhere else other than a pub.
Yeah.
You can have an incredible Halfway Crux Pilsner in a can. You can have it in your parents' basement. You can have it at, you know, at the beach. You can have it wherever. You can only have cask ale inside of a pub. It's an experience that you can't recreate anywhere else other than a pub. And unfortunately, sometimes that experience can be poor, like Steve was referencing. But that is, doesn't matter, like Steve was mentioning earlier, doesn't matter how old you are, you're looking for an authentic experience.
Yep.
And there's nothing more authentic than the experience of seeing someone draw a good pint and serve a really, really excellent pint, because you can't do that if you're just sitting in a basement by yourself somewhere. You can't do that if you're wherever. You have to go to a pub that cares about what they're doing to experience this, this just incredible moment and this incredible beer. And that's such an important part of why people care about cask ale, and why they, why I think more people will care about cask ale. You know, year of the cask or the year of the real ale, I don't know, but you have to go to a pub to experience real ale. You can't trade for a cask ale across the country. That's a huge part of this equation.
Todd.
Well, I was going to actually say something along the lines of what C was talking about. In the beginning, we've always had like English beer and lager and all this kind of stuff, but we had one engine in the beginning and it wasn't selling well. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to start filling different shit. I would do like a grisette that's dry hopped, or I would do something a little funky and add some, you know, rosemary or whatever. And I'm like, why am I trying to reinvent the wheel instead of taking the educational component and really lean into it? And so we did that, and we actually have Neil come up once a week to help us with beer school. And, you know, making English beer all the time definitely helps, and we end up getting a second cask engine, so now we have two. And honestly, we sell a fair amount of cask beer, not as much as these guys do, but you have to want to do it. But that's why I hope cask beer does grow to, you know, Andy, to the numbers you were talking about, but I hope it doesn't become this thing where guys like Steve or Neil go in and go, fuck, you know, they have an engine, but they're really screwing it up.
So Todd, when you're, how much cask are you doing at your establishment, and what do you, you know, what is working? What do you find that's not working? What are you going to think of trying in the future?
I mean, honestly, it all works for us. We have four English beers that we brew all the time, and we send a good portion of that down to Brickstore via Firkins. But of those four, we cask about 2.5-3 barrels of it. So then we'll move it over to the Brights. We keg some of it off and can a tiny bit. But it keeps us in a great rotation to make sure that when Steve shows up and he's like, where's the cask at? Or actually, he didn't have to say that. But, you know, it works really well. But I'll be honest with you, the one thing I have noticed, if I have multiple bitters on, so I'll just tell you what we have. We have the Digital Comforts that Neil mentioned. We have a Golden Ale, which is a little bit slower mover. And then we have an English Porter. And what's the other one I'm missing? Oh, Analog Life, or Mild. So we will do, like, a different one-off from time to time. It's a way to, like, do smoky beers and stuff like this. But if I have multiple bitters on, they cannibalize each other, and it makes it a little tougher. So I think having those four different styles is kind of fun. We haven't really done much in the way of, like, hoppy beers. We do have something fun in the tanks right now with Ron Pattinson that called for a bunch of friggin' invert sugar that was a pain in the ass to use and source. 30 pounds. Thank you, Ron Pattinson. But yeah, I mean, I don't mean it all works like it's just flying out, but they sell pretty well and we keep them super fresh. But, you know, honestly, trading knowledge back and forth and having Brickstore as an outlet has been super helpful for us to keep our cask program and our brewing of English beers going. So, yeah, we love it. We don't send a ton of English beers out in cans to distro or anything like this, but, you know, it's special. And like Neil said, you want to keep it close so you can kind of educate it and, you know, You can't transport that even in a can. We're going to gas it up a little bit more, right? So,
Neil, as a publican, somebody who's working with these breweries to, you know, and deciding what beer to bring in, it's not like you're going off of a list for cask beer. Probably it's not like the distributor sends you a list. You're like, okay, I like this and I like this. I assume that you have to be a lot more hands-on in not only selecting but also encouraging, working with breweries to figure out what works for your list, and just trying to like cultivate the relationship. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you do that? Because it's like I said, it's not just like you just put in the order and then that cask just rolls in. Probably,
yeah, it's feast or famine. Unfortunately, it's either we're having a tough time sourcing it, to be totally honest with you, because Todd might not have an English beer on his schedule. So, okay, well, now we need to look at some of the other breweries that we trust to not only make good traditional English-style beer, but also to be able to condition their firkins correctly, to be able to also know exactly what we're looking for. We've had some breweries reach out and say, hey, we have this Mexican lager with lime. We're going to put in some firkins for you. And I say, no. I don't want to tell people no. We love beer, and these are breweries that we really appreciate and love. But if you're putting a Mexican-style lager with lime in a firkin, we're just frankly not interested.
Yeah.
We'd rather have that beer engine empty for a week than put on something that isn't going to properly showcase what real ale is all about. But it is tricky not only to get English-style beer, because Todd can tell you English-style beer isn't necessarily the hottest thing in the world right now.
Yep.
And that's mostly what we're looking for at the pub is English-style beer. We want to kind of present traditional styles in a traditional format. The other tricky part that we run into is Todd might say, hey, I got 6 firkins of this dark mild ready to go, and we'll go, great. And then Blake at Creature Comforts will go, hey, we just finished up our English dark mild. We got 8 firkins for you. You ready? I'll go, okay, we can do 2 dark milds. And then Sean at Halfway Crooks will say, we're thinking about doing a dark mild. Would you guys be interested? And we go, no. Yep. We love you. We love what you do. We trust you with real ale. But please, we don't need another friggin' dark mild.
This is a problem I hear all the time from publicans. Like, we have just so much dark mild available to us. Just so much.
It's honestly a real problem, you know? We all have our own crosses to bear here, you know?
That's an amazing problem to have. I love that you have that problem. God bless craft beer in the United States. That's amazing.
So exactly to your point, it's having those conversations with the breweries before they brew the beer, figuring out what their timeline is, and then I keep my own spreadsheet. Okay, I talked to Blake at Creature Comforts. I know he has 8 of these coming at such and such a date. So, you know, then if Todd says I have 9 of the same style available, maybe we'll only bring in 3. It's a lot of work, whereas draft beer, you look at what the wholesaler has and say, all right, we want one of those and one of those and one of those.
Steve, you work for, we've talked a little bit about it, you work for Caskmark. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Caskmark is an industry-driven quality program. So it was developed kind of in the 90s generally by people in the British brewing industry who were concerned about the flagging quality of cask ale in its homeland. And so all they introduced was a quality scheme where beers are independently evaluated by professionals, often former brewers or active brewers or people who know how cask ale should be. And it's a very simple, it's like a judging, but it's a very sort of simple form where you're really looking at, do they have good temperature control? Are the beers bright and clear? I mean, the myth about cask ale is that, it's an unfiltered beer, so it's okay if it's hazy. The proof of how a pub serves a beer, whenever I serve a beer, when I sell her a beer, I want it to be bright and clear. I want it to, but I can only work with what I'm given. Yeah. So it's this great partnership between the brewery and the pub and how those beers are presented. So what Caskmark, I think, has done is has created this great communication between brewers and pubs.
Yeah.
And it's recognizing pubs that do it right, because Caskmark pubs sell more cask beer, and they also, from a consumer standpoint, you don't have to know how it's brewed or how it's made. But I've talked to many people in the UK, they know if you go to a place that has a Caskmark, you're going to always get to try the beer before you pay for it. If you're in Caskmark, you have to offer it. Try before you buy. I mean, that was a revolution.
So they'll pull you a sample?
Yes.
No.
Oh, yeah. Caskmark pubs must pour you sample. And actually, I've been to places, they don't know, I'm in the UK, they don't know I do Caskmark. Guys go, I see you're looking at our pups. Can I pour you a sample of this? I'm like, yeah, thank you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, because that's the way it's supposed to work. You shouldn't have to know any of this because it's about flavors and about presentation. So the guy who taught me how to do cellaring is my friend Mark Dorber, who ran the White Horse at Price is Green. He's been gone from there for a long time, and he runs two pubs in Suffolk, the Anchor at Walberswick, and the Swan, which is farther south, is just gone massive remodeling. And I saw it, and it's not fully reopened. It'll be soon. But it's just remarkable what he does. And he just, what Mark taught me from the beginning was, when you're souring a beer, it's all about the beauty of each individual beer that you sell. So needless to say, he had no problem getting Caskmark certification for his pubs. It was really easy for him because that's what he did. Mm-hmm. He almost drove this on his own. And it just, he's, outside of being a great friend, he's always been a hero for me from the beer side. Because as a publican, he just looks at it and says, why would I serve anything that's not beautiful, that's not good? And, I mean, your customers will, I mean, I knew from the moment I went to his place the first time and compared to other pubs, I said, everything he has is presented beautifully. It doesn't matter which brewery it's from, they're beautifully presented. And I could go to one of their Tide pubs, and they weren't served as well as they were at his pub. And one of the things I learned from him is, like, cask ale, the one thing we always forget about is maturation of the beer. And that it maturing a beer, most breweries and most pubs are interested now in knocking it out the door. What I learned from him was you take delivery and hold it. Even if the guys... even if the breweries who brought him in said, oh, no, it's ready to go now.
Yeah.
He would hold it for weeks. Yeah. And I think that's a very different approach. It's like, we're better than this. I'm better than this. I don't want to give the consumer a subpar experience.
Mm-hmm.
So Caskmark, I think, rewards the pubs that take the time that my friend Mark always did to get their beers right.
Todd, so, oh, you sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say one quick thing on the Caskmark that I love is the visual element of it. They literally give you a plaque to put in front of your pub. So Todd displays it really prominently. It's the first thing that you see when you walk up to the front door of Good Word is the Caskmark. Ours right in the front of the building. You can't miss it. I love that element because I can go to a tiny town in the UK that I've never been to before, walk down the street and look at a place and go, okay, first of all, Caskmark certified. It's going to be great. Second of all, it's a Tide House. Oh, it's a Timothy Taylor pub. I'm going to waste my afternoon in there. That's perfect. It's having the ability to literally walk in front of a place that you've never been before, look at it and go, oh, I'm gonna have a great time in here. It's amazing.
Yeah. Todd, as a brewer, what advice do you have for other brewers who are looking to maybe dip their toes into cask beer? Are you telling them absolute shit show, don't do this? Are you saying, here's how I would recommend that you go about it? What advice do you have on because we've talked about the gentility of it, the difficult, sometimes, you know, some say it's difficult, some say it's easy, but it obviously requires care and attention. What is your advice for folks who are looking to do it?
So I've been lucky to make a lot of friends in the industry for sure.
Well, they're recording it too.
Oh.
Can you cut him out later? I'll take the mic a bit.
Okay. Dave, can you hear me? Dave Blanchard. Dave Perry Blanchard. All right.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky to make a lot of friends in the industry. And I try to surround myself with guys of similar ilk. And so even though what I said earlier is I don't want everybody to rush in, the people who do ask, and we have, again, been lucky to have a lot of people ask about cask beer, they don't ask about recipe development necessarily. It's mostly about how to treat the cask and all this. But it is so simple. Like, for me, I think a lot about the recipe. Like, take this for instance. An English ale, unless it's just a Maris Otter beer with some, you know, Golding hops or whatever, there's a lot that can go, you know, in the recipe with, like, a porter or whatever. So there's a lot of thought behind the grist. Whereas, like, pale lager, there's not a whole lot going on, right? But the brew day for the pale lager is intense, especially for us. It's step mash, it's decocted probably. And then there's a lot of cellaring things that go on. But with the English beer, the work is all done in the recipe, and the brew day is like half the time of a lager beer. And so, yeah, all the work really happens later with cellarmen like Neil. But doing cask beer, I had a guy, so Matt at Threes was like, you know, tell me what you know about cask, because I was interested in bottle conditioning. He's like, I'll tell you what I know about bottle conditioning. You tell me what you know about cask beer. I was like, it's not an even trade.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll tell you, but it'll take 10 minutes and you'll be a badass, or you'll make quality stuff. And I told him, he's like, yeah, you're right. I'm not telling you about bottle conditioning now. That's not actually true. He did still tell me. But anyway, it's simple. You just keep it simple. Don't overthink it. Just make sure the one key thing is make sure your lines are clean, because when I visit places that, to Neil's point, aren't marked, because there's not a lot in America, they a lot of times, if the line's funky, you get a lot of diacetyl. But yeah, just let those casks sit a little bit longer than you think. Don't rush that shit. You know, 7 to 10 days is what we do warm. And then after that, we like to put it in our walk-in. These guys have a great setup in their walk-in, because they have a specific place for it. It's always at 52 to 54 degrees. We put ours in the beer walk-in, so it gets a little bit cooler, but we try to tap them first thing in the morning, and then by lunchtime or a little later, it's ready to rock. So, yeah.
Neil, on the other side, what if there's a publican who's looking to get into cask beer, what advice do you have for them on how to do it?
Be prepared to dump beer. That's a very, very important part, is you have to taste those casks every single day. And if it's starting to oxidize, if it's starting to get sour, tart, anything like that, you just got to be comfortable saying, I'm about to dump 4 gallons of beer. Thankfully, we pull through our stuff very, very quickly at the pub. But be prepared to just say, to taste that beer every single day, and might come a point where you say, you know what, I've got to dump this beer because I'm not doing my brand a service, I'm not doing the pub a service, I'm also not doing the brewery that brewed this any service. Temperature is a tricky part, like Todd was just explaining. We're super fortunate to have a large space that we keep at 55 degrees Fahrenheit. So we have the ability to keep all of these casks at the correct temperature, let them settle, let, you know, kind of have everything stage and not have to keep everything at 38 or 40 degrees. So we're fortunate to have that. Temperature is a huge, huge part of it. You don't want to serve cask beer too cold. You know, Steve, when he comes to assess the pub for cask mark, is looking at temperature. That's part of one of the lines he has to assess this beer for. It's clarity, it's flavor, it's aroma, and then it's temperature. Too cold is not great. Too warm is definitely not great. This isn't warm beer. This isn't room temperature beer. This is cool beer. This is not ice cold beer. It's cool beer. So having the ability to run that beer at the correct temperature, it might require a separate glycol chiller. It might require a separate, even if it's just a kegerator that you keep at 52, 54 degrees Fahrenheit, investing in infrastructure that's going to allow you to keep it at correct temperature. So taste the beer, don't be afraid to dump it, and then keep it at the correct temperature, and then you're going to be good for a while.
On that end, too many places will serve their cask lines are not run through a chilled trunk line. They really should be. It's just that they're not 38 degrees Fahrenheit. They're more at 50 Fahrenheit. So you should run if you're really serious about this, temperature control is so critical, and people will drink it. We're all about breaking the expectations. People always say, they're still buying this, English drink their beers warm and flat. Christ, if I hear that again, I mean, really, I was there for 2 weeks. I had one beer that was too flat. I didn't have any beer that was too warm.
Yeah.
And by the way, every beer was bright and polished clear, beautifully presented in a glass with great head retention and beautiful lacing in the glassware. So I think, people think that it's easy. Paul Pendyke, who does UK brewing system, sells much of the equipment in the US. He says, it's the hardest thing in the world because people want to buy the equipment. They buy the equipment. He goes, it's not the equipment, it's how you use it. So I could sell you this, but don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, to the point about temperature, you look at the sheets way more than I do. If I remember correctly, you lose more points for it being too warm than you do for it being too cold. Is that correct?
Absolutely true.
So that's something to, you know, to your original
question.
That's
really interesting.
Yeah. Keep that in mind when you're setting up your system. Too cold is a better problem than too warm. Don't think about cask ale as warm. If it is a little too cold, that's better than it being a little bit too warm.
There are two things I say to brewers all the time. Err on the side of having your beer too cold, and also err on the side of having more carbonation in your beer. So increasingly what I've seen over the years, I've handled casks for over 30 years, and in the old days, everything you used to get was explosive. They were so overprime. You would spile a beer and basically it would blow a beer shower to your ceiling. You're going to be covered in hops and yeast when you breach the cask. Now they're dead on arrival. And I say, look, give me condition. If there's no condition in the beer, as a cellar guy, as someone who's running a pub like Neil and Todd, I can't put carbonation back in there if it's not there. But if you give me too much, I can get it to the right balance. So those are so that's one thing that's important. The other is temperature control, which at the pub level I can control. But the brewers have to give me stuff. They have to give me the raw ingredients to make it work. They have to give me a beer that's worth drinking. And that's the education from the brewing side, is that making sure that you don't err on the side of having too little condition, and that the beer has been given enough time to mature. And let that the yeast, if you have sugar additions, that they're allowed, you let the yeast eat the sugars and ferment out. And you break so many of these myths when people get a beer that's beautifully cool. You touch a glass of cask ale at the right temperature. You can touch the glass and you know it's right.
Yeah.
It's not warm. It's obviously not warm. I've had draft beer in bars in glassware that's warmer than cask beer served properly.
Yeah. Todd, we are at the end here, and I wanted to give you the final word. Tell us about the event that you've curated here that has brought us all to Duluth, Georgia, not Decatur, where I was yesterday. And I'm actually looking at a sign that says Duluth, and I still messed it up, so that is definitely on me. It is an absolutely glorious day. The wind is blowing. The trains are running. We're having a great time with Little Beer. Tell us about this festival, why you wanted to do a Little Beer Festival, and what has brought everybody here.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, it's not a unique idea, so I can't take credit for that, but I've been to a lot of beer festivals, and we first put this idea together, I think, in like 2021, and we pitched it to the city. Being the fools that we were, we're like, we'd like to put an event on this year in a couple months. They were like, yeah, we'll see you in 2022, the next year, because they get their calendar done, so far in advance. And, kind of fell off my radar a little bit. 2 weeks later, they reached out and they're like, hey, we had something canceled. Can you put it together in 7 weeks? And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, sure. I can. Yes. And then it was just like a lot of pressure to get it done. But we luckily had 55 of our friends show up, and it was super intimate. And I will say we sold out. I text Dave earlier. We sold out today, which is great. But we sold it out at 500 tickets. We don't want to sell a fucking thousand tickets. Yeah. We don't want it to be overrun. It's an open air event. As you see, you look around, you see all these families milling around. I guarantee you a third or more of the people don't know what the hell is going on down here. They're just walking around. And that's what we want. We wanted to have this festival that's not a bunch of lines, not a hypey sort of whatever, but to celebrate small beers. And so, yeah, it's just a simple festival. And I think what makes it really truly special isn't anything I do. It's all these relationships we've been able to, like, cultivate over the years. And all the people who show up that are the, brewery reps or the owners or the brewers or any of that sort of thing. It's what makes it special. And if you don't show up, you get put in the orphan the orphanage. I don't know if you guys visited the Lager Orphanage, but it was a hilarious idea, I thought. I don't know if it's still funny. You go in there 2 years and you're off. I'm sorry. You got to show up sometimes. But, yeah, it's a great fest. It takes a whole lot of concerted efforts from other folks. And I play a small part. And it is stressful for the first half hour before the event and the half hour that we're open. And then it's kind of just walking around. And like you said, shaking people's hands and see if they need something. But, yeah, fortunate to have Duluth as a backdrop, and the city does a shit ton for us to actually host it here. So,
typically humble. I will tell you, this fest, I've been to a lot of different beer festivals. The best sign of a great fest is that brewers themselves want to attend. You know, brewers often find beer festivals to be work, stuff that they're not, you know, they've been in an industry for more than a minute. They're not necessarily wanting to go to beer festivals like they used to 10, 20 years ago. There are a lot of brewers here who have traveled a great distance, a lot of friends, a lot of folks I haven't seen in a while, and they're all excited to be here. And that's a testament both to you, to this fest, to the idea. And we all love drinking, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, you know, bitters and pilsner and just different kinds of lager. It's a great event. Could not be a more glorious day here. So we great thanks to you for putting this on, and to Neil and to Steve and to Todd. Thank you for being on this panel.
Thank you.
You know, this year, maybe next year will be the year of Cask Ale. We'll find out. Or maybe we'll just continue to just drink a little bit of Cask Ale at the right places, Cask Mark places, and we'll enjoy it as we go. But thank you, guys. And thank you to my partner, John Hall, for letting me hijack this this podcast. And I'm sure I'll be back next week because, John, we're gonna fire you. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. My thanks to Andy. And a quick programming note, Little Beer 5 will be held on Saturday, April 19th in Duluth, Georgia. Get it on your calendar and as part of your travel plans for next year. Also, our sincere thanks to Todd DiMatteo and the city of Duluth, Georgia, for the hospitality and the ability to record this episode. Next week, it's a conversation about specialty grains moderated by my colleague and co-host of the All About Beer podcast, Don Tess. So make sure you tune in for that. If you need to reach me, you can find me on email. It's John Hall, J-O-H-N-H-O-L-L, at All About Beer. That's how you can get in touch with questions, comments, guest suggestions, or anything else. A reminder, go visit allaboutbeer.com. There you can check out the podcast page, the merch page, and read great new content, as well as the archives going back to 1979. Don't forget, you can also follow All About Beer on social media at All About Beer. And if you're interested in supporting journalism in the beer space, email us at info@allaboutbeer.com, or please go to patreon.com/allaboutbeer. All About Beer has a podcast channel now. Search and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Still This Beer still has new episodes every Monday, and the BYO Nano podcast comes out on the 15th of every month. And don't forget, go check out probrewer.com each week for original articles from the All About Beer team. As for this show, Nate Schweber does the music, Jeff Quinn designed our logo, and I'm John Hall. And once again, thanks to Andy Crouch. New episodes release every Wednesday, and that's when I'll be back again to drink beer and to think beer.